Session number 914.
Colonel McCorkadale, Rail 1. Could we start off by your just telling me a little about your personal background and the circumstances from which you joined the army in 1921?
Why I joined the army?
Yes, and what sort of, you know, whether it's for family reasons, background, that kind of thing.
No, I had no family reasons at all, really. My father was, he was a yeomanry, but he was too old for the First War, so he never served. And my brother, my eldest brother, he was a yeoman, a lot of scouts. We were sort of half yeomanry, half infantry, a lot of scouts. And he served all through the First War, and was still serving when the Second War started. And my second brother, he was going to be a regular soldier. Well, he was a regular soldier. He went through Sandhurst during the First War when they reduced the period at Sandhurst from 2 years down to 6 months. And he joined the Cameron Highlanders. And he went straight out, actually he was old enough, I've forgotten what the age limit was, straight out to France. And within a few weeks, he was very badly wounded indeed.
Mm.
Shot right through the lungs, and in those days they didn't patch up lungs like they could now, or cut off one lung and leave the other. And he was in the casualty clearing station at Calais, and he was one of the cases I presume they imagined would not live, because my father and mother were sent for from home and taken over to Calais to see him. That was only done to people who were not likely to recover. But he did recover, and he went through about 9 major operations. We were still having him when the war finished, and he recovered, and he lived at the age of 66. And that was the only connection really I've had with the army at all. That, as I said, my family is a printing business, and my father was one of the sons of my grandfather who started the business up. And as my father and his 3 brothers all had sons, they all the sons couldn't go into the family business together.
Rationally.
And I being number 3 in my family, of course couldn't get into the family business. If my second brother had not been so badly wounded and had stayed in the army, they invalided him out of the army, I might have gone into a family business, never gone into the army at all.
So printing not being open to you, under what sort of motivated you to decide on an army career?
Well, we used to go up, as I told you the other day, we used to go up to Campbelltown in the Mullican Tower, where the Navy came in every summer, a big, large number of fleets, not a number of ships. And I had a godfather who was an admiral in the Navy, and he had friends on all the ships, and he said, this is the introduction to my father. Oh, people coming up there, and we used to see a lot of them, and of course they invited us on board. We got to know a lot of them. And I was a small boy, aged about 9 or 10. I was mad keen to go into the Navy. But on going to a prep school, after about 2 years there, the headmaster quite rightly said, you haven't got the... Well, he said, told my father that I hadn't got the brains, the examination brains, to pass the naval examination. And you'd better give up the idea of going to the Navy. And my father more or less suggested that you go into the Army. And those days one did, took one's father's advice and went into the Army. All the different to now, when people, the young, don't seem to take much advice from their elders at all. And that's the reason I got into the Army.
So Army was sort of a second choice?
Yes. I was, my first idea was to, when I was sent to go into a Highland regiment, and then I had 2 cousins in the King's Home Guards who persuaded me to go into to them. I was keen on riding, and they didn't have much difficulty in persuading me to go into the KDGs. Got into them.
Did you consider any other arm of the service than the cavalry?
No.
Not interested?
No, infantry first, and then a Highland regiment. I wouldn't have gone into any other regiment. I come from Haddonstock, and the only reason I didn't go into the Greys, the only Scottish cavalry regiment, they were what one called a very expensive regiment in those days, which have a pretty large amount of private money.
Yes. Was there anything else that attracted you? Was there anything that attracted you to the cavalry?
Nothing much, except from the point of view of having, being with horses and riding. I'd always ridden from the time I was a small boy.
Yes. That seems like, to me, not knowing much about the circumstances of that time, joining for the horses seems like a little, rather a slight reason to get into a career of soldiering.
Yes, well, in those days one thought if you've got to be a soldier, well, why not be a soldier in a regiment which you would get a certain amount, a good deal of kind of riding.
Yes.
You'd be all on horseback and you'd be with horses. One wasn't thinking much about war so much as working with a horse regiment, I think.
In your experience with the KDG, was that a fairly typical cavalry officer's reasoning for going into the...
I think on the whole, yes, I think it was.
Yes.
I mean, we didn't want to, nobody wanted to go to war, although one trained to...
Mm. Now, after Sandhurst in 1923, you joined the King's Dragoon Guards and went with them to Germany. After Sandhurst, was there any basic induction course, as it were, before you got command of a company or something? Was there any basic induction course in order to make you?
When you joined, you had to do. You were a recruit officer, they called you. And you went through recruit training like the ordinary other rank. The riding part of it and the horse mastership, that side, you went through, you were attached to a squadron, and your squadron leader was in charge of you. And we did riding school and remount training of horses under the equitation officer.
Mm. Did this introduce... any different quality of riding as such than you would have already experienced just as a civilian person interested
yes,
in
it? Yes, well, it required very much more skill. I mean, you have to be much more experienced than I ever was before. But of course, in those days, anybody going into a cavalry regiment and people going into infantry regiments at Sandhurst did a good deal of riding. They had a equitation school at Sandhurst, and you did a good many hours per week riding. And if you were cavalry, you did more than the infantry, people than the infantry.
Can you tell me a bit about some of the exercises and drills you went through as a recruit officer with the KDG? I mean, what actually went on at riding school and in the other aspects of riding and horse mastership?
Other than that. Other than riding and horse mastership?
No. I'm interested in precisely what kind of exercises and what kind of riding disciplines recruit officers were trained. I'm just asking what actually did happen when you got to the regiment and began your training as a recruit officer. Could you tell me a bit more about the sort of drills and exercises at riding school and the... What was life like during that period?
Well, it was hard work because you were given a remount to train under the equitation officer and other rank staff. So you then that was your job to train that horse under their supervision, and then after that, before breakfast, after breakfast, you went on. Riding school parades, in which you were joined up a ride with the other ranks, recruits other ranks. And you did all the training that you do to learn riding.
What kind of skills did they concentrate on in the riding training?
Oh, everything in the way of, to start with, riding, jumping, the correct position on the horse, the use of the legs. It's all rather technical.
Well, be a little technical.
Well, I don't know. I mean, your position at the canter, the position at the trot, the position at the walk, the position at the jump, how to use one's legs and hands with the horse. And there's all the, what they now call dressage. In those days, it was rather simpler than what they do now. But we did these left half pass and the right half pass and all those things they do in dressage. You see these three-day events on the television in a minor way compared to what they do now. And then you had to, of course, you had to do your ceremonial drill.
What was that?
Well, for ceremonial parades, you were, ceremonial parade, you sat down the saddle, you didn't rise at the trot. You sat down the saddle, and your body had to be very supple, and then you had to hold what to do with your sword. You had to go through a sword drill, how to hold your sword, and sort of carry sword and shoulder the sword. And then you did skill at arms, which was dummy thrusting.
What's that?
That was a course of small jumps. There were four jumps like that. And you jumped over the first one, and there was a dummy on a sack, there he was, on a spring thing, and you stuck that one. And then you jumped over the next jump, and there was a dummy on this side, and you had to go right across your horse and just hold through that one. And then you do your pistol out of your, well, you had blank ammunition in it, and there's a balloon on a jump on the right hand side, and you shot that as you jumped. The one on the ground, and you can't gallop a horse, and you shot that. And one on the next jump, you shot it on your left hand side, across the horse's neck. And then there was a lance stuck up in the ground. You put your revolver away, picked up the lance, and charged down. And there were rings on a sort of gallows, you might call them, hanging out. And you had to get the lance through at the gallows, put the point through these rings, and get the two rings down your lance. And direct you down there, there was a peg, an ordinary clothes peg in the ground, stuck in the ground. You had to stick a lance in that and pull it out of the ground.
A clothes peg or a tent peg?
A tent peg, I mean, yeah. Not a clothes peg, tent peg. That was a skill at arms. That was your skill with your sword, skill with your revolver, skill with your with the lance. Mm. We, being a Dragoon Guards regiment, weren't equipped with lances, we were equipped with swords and revolvers, the men with rifles. Lancer regiments were equipped with lances, but we learnt all that.
Yes.
And then, of course, there were competitions in all these things.
These were regular events, were they?
Oh, regular events, and you had these competitions finished up. The winning teams at all the different stations, the winning individuals, finished up at Olympia, at the World Military Tournament.
So you were competing against others within your regiment?
In the regiment, you got to win the regimental things. Then you had to win your order shot command or Tidworth, whatever it happened to be. And then you went to Olympia, where you competed, officers in one class, other ranks in another class. They're separate. And then the winners, the officers and the winners of the other ranks, competed in the finals.
Yes.
First thing was called the bronze tournament, the silver tournament, and the gold medal tournament.
So far we've been talking about individual training, basically. What was the focus of of formation training? What kind of exercises did you do? What kind of roles were you being trained for in the squadron and regimental training?
Oh, troop drill, really, all the different movements. So, having been a Sandhurst cadet, you came away from Sandhurst, I think I could quite confidently commanded a battalion of infantry on a parade ground and gone through all the drill motions. But you hadn't learned any of the cavalry things. You had to forget all the infantry things and learn your cavalry drill, which is quite different.
Tell me a bit about that aspect of it, as you've told me about the individual, just to complement it.
It's difficult to explain it. We've had troop drill, you see. A horse can't turn about like a man. You have left wheel and right wheels and things. The swords are holding the swords are carrying, the swords are slow. It's not very difficult to explain much.
Apart from the drills, there presumably was technical training for the regiment and annual exercises and things like that. What was the pattern there?
When you finished your riding school training, you then went to your squadron. You were directly under your squadron leader. And then you went out on squadron training, troop training, squadron training, where you did tactical exercises.
Mm. How was that organized? What kind of things did you do at that stage?
Well, I don't explain how much you did very well, very much what the armor cars do now. You were the eyes of the army, going out and I've forgotten the word. Reconnoitering, mm-hmm. and by sending back information about the enemy's position. But then, of course, generally the enemy in those days consisted of a line of very thin troops with a few flags and things representing all the other. It made it very difficult to do very thorough training in a way. And there's a lot of drill, of course, drill ceremonial there, as a troop and as a squadron.
Yes.
And then as a regiment. Whole regiment of drill.
Apart from the reconnaissance aspect, what other roles in this period, in the 20s and the 30s?
Well, you would maneuver. Great thing of the cavalry, like Waterloo, anywhere else, was outflank the infantry. You would dismount. You had rifles, you see, and you had machine guns on horses, and you had light automatics. You would dismount and you would try and get around the flanks of the enemy position. That's the sort of thing one would do.
Mm-hmm. So reconnaissance, outflanking, did any other roles receive any attention in the training?
Well, we have done the old-fashioned charge. I don't think one would ever have done it in actual fact.
Where did you first do that?
Oh, I can't remember. On manoeuvres, I think, or something.
This would have been in the late 20s.
Yes, we finished up, which is very, in a way, sort of rather a joke, I think. Finished up the manoeuvres for regiment charge. The only people it wasn't a joke for was the infantry lying on the ground. There were about 400 horses coming at them. You could see them get up and run, too, a lot of them. I don't blame them. The worst thing possible to do is to run, because a horse might easily knock you over.
Yes.
But if you lay still, a horse very, very seldom will tread on a man, if you can't help it. If you're running and jigging about, he can't help it, he hits you and knocks you flying.
Were there any other occasions when you practiced the charge?
No, it's only about once or twice.
I see. Yes. You had joined the regiments as you said, primarily to work with horses. Did you find from your early experiences with the regiment that it proved to be the kind of life you wished for and had anticipated?
Yes, oh, very much so. And I thought we found later on, even when we were mechanized, being used to the coast country gave one a good eye for the country, where you could get across the country where you couldn't get across. Found we even bogged with horses in the desert, soft sand, that sort of thing. There's no doubt, being in Egypt as a horse regiment, one got to know what the desert was like, where you would go and where you couldn't go.
You were in England from 1925 to 32, quite a long period. We've talked about the military aspects of life, but what was the social life like for a cavalry officer during those years in England?
Oh, it was very pleasant indeed. One of the great things about it was whenever one moved from one station to another, you all moved together, see, and you had your own friends amongst the married people and the unmarried people, and you all moved on. When you arrived at a new place, you weren't strangers. You had everybody was there together again. And the social life was, I suppose, very similar to social life from a place like Kelso here. Parties, dances, regimental dances. And of course, as a cavalry officer, you were encouraged to hunt and play polo and that sort of thing. That's all good training for your riding.
You played polo in England?
Oh, yes.
As well as hunt?
England and out in Germany.
How often did you hunt and play polo in England?
Well, it depended. Good, often depended on how many horses you had. Of course, you had two charges as a cavalry officer, and you were allowed to hunt on them, and you had your own private ones. You had two soldier servants. One was supposed to be a groom, one was a groom, and the other was supposed to be a valet, really, which was not enough work for him. You put them both in the stables, you had two grooms. And when you went on, you had your 2 months leave every winter. You nearly always went away to somewhere to hunt. I went to my home. My father lived. He was alive until the middle of the war. Mm.
So life really was...
Oh, very pleasant.
Horses.
It was all centered on the horse. Mm. Everybody, more or less... Unwritten law was you had to play polo and you had to hunt a cavalry officer. There's no use being a cavalry officer.
Yes.
And the horse days, which you did those, both those things.
Yes. How seriously was the military side of the work?
Which side?
How seriously was the military side of the work taken?
Oh, pretty seriously. Mm. Yes. Oh, yes, you had, Inspector General Cavalry came and inspected you and all the commanding officers and all the shots and places like that.
Yes.
Oh, yes. And maneuvers. One thing you would never get away from on leave was when maneuvers were on, especially a place like Aldershot and Tidworth. Very big maneuvers went on for a fortnight, 3 weeks.
Did you, on those maneuvers, ever... become involved in exercises with or against units from the tank corps?
I suppose we did a little of the latter stages just before the war.
Yes. Oh, I see, rather later, after you'd become mechanised.
Yeah.
I meant while still a horse regiment.
Oh, yes. Not very much. Later on,
not while still a horse regiment.
Oh yes, well, the tanks were there. Yeah.
Yes,
but they were pretty.
Yes, my question was, while you were still a horse unit, before you were converted to armored cars, while still a horse unit, did you take part in any exercise with elements of the tank corps?
Oh yes.
Yes.
The tank corps were there on big maneuvers, places like Aldershot. Every arm in the service was there.
Yes. Were they interesting for any reasons at all, in contrasting your effectiveness with that of the tank corps?
Well, one, of course, the horse red couldn't take on a tank, but you would outmaneuver them, get around their flanks, and report where they, what they were doing and where they were going. Would message send back. They say you were the eyes of the army, just the same as you were when you were army corps later on.
Was competition during exercises between cavalry and tank corps units fairly fierce?
What do you mean? Bad feeling?
No. I mean professional competition, professional rivalry to win your objectives.
Oh, yes, a certain amount, yes. You always try to prove you were more useful than the others. And the tanks weren't all that good, were they, in those days? I mean, no, I don't mean the tank regiments weren't very good, but the actual vehicles weren't very good.
Slow, unreliable.
And we could get across country much quicker than they could.
Yes.
We'd outmaneuver them, that sort of thing.
In 1932, you went to Egypt with the regiment. Did you enjoy life in Egypt?
Yes, I'm very much a lover of home, but I did enjoy it. We had very interesting time out there.
How did it compare and differ from cavalry life in England, which you've just been telling me about?
More or less the same. You had your recruits, riding school that was always going on. You had maneuvers, big maneuvers. And we did enormous distances across deserts, without water and this sort of thing. That all had to be brought up. They even tried it out by air. In one scheme with the Air Force.
Really, what happened?
They carried water down to the desert for us. We had these canvas water troughs, and they landed. We would land more or less, not anywhere in the desert, but where the sand was suitable, you know, where you could land. And they brought water out for our horses.
Egypt, good country for cavalry?
Well, it's all desert, so you couldn't go into the cultivated area because you do much, much damage. You know, the Nile is flooded. Mm. They flood the ground there, and they grow these crops, and they're all little fields, paddy fields and stuff. You couldn't go into that, so it's all out in the desert when you're working. Mm. And that gave a big scope.
I believe that the social life in Egypt was concentrated in the season at Cairo. What was that like?
Well, we had this very good club, a Gezira club, which was all then white. No Egyptians in it. There they had very good polo grounds. Every kind of sport you could play there. Tennis, squash, golf, everything you can think of. And every barracks had its football grounds. You played on sand. And the social life there, a very good tub. And again, see, you went to the regiment, and all your families went with you, and all your friends went with you. Gradually people retired and left, and other people got married, and there were always your friends with you. That's one thing one misses, I think, when one retires altogether. Mm. Your old friends get spread out all over the country, and you don't, and it's not the happy family as it used to be. You only see people occasionally, social life. Transportation School of Whedon, that was where you really got your best training for riding, and how to instruct, you learned there.
What did Whedon provide that you couldn't get with the regiment?
Well, they start with, they always looked at you, having done how many parades, riding parades at Santos for 2 years, then done 6 months riding school before you were passed off by your commanding officer as fit and good enough horseman. You went to Whedon, you were told you knew nothing. And you had your saddle.